strikes me that what you have in this presentation, which is somewhat unusual to have in a presentation on elder abuse, is you have very pragmatic. You have a highly quantitative study, but with an application to it. And now what you've all been waiting for is a theoretical study that's just underway. So you get a little bit of everything here. And so my piece, and I'm doing this with colleagues, Dr. Rodney Gutman, who is a neuro guy in the Graduate Center for Gerontology, who does work on calpain research, and Dr. Marta Mendiondo, a biostatistician who's working on that, and Jim Grace, who is a real great friend from the Cabinet for Health and Family Services in Kentucky, who usually says yes to everything we come up with, and we're so glad about that. So, what we're going to try to do here in this particular work, it's very nascent, very out there work. We'll see where it goes. And Ms. Whittier, we have talked a little bit about this, and this is sort of how we have moved forward. Not a lot, but a little. So in that, I don't know how many of you struggle with cell-to-society types of work, or if you struggle with this at all, but we do, where I am, at Kentucky, we struggle with a cell-to-society gerontology program. And so this has been a series of conversations about how to think about elder abuse. And the issue is here that our prevention efforts may be far beyond where we really should be having them. So we need to move the marker of where we start issues of prevention far down the age span. And so we're trying to look at some issues that may be risks beyond, Ron, what you have, although it would be certainly contributing. So unfortunately, for the biologists, the hypothesis is called the multiple hit hypothesis. They were never thinking about elder abuse, and so I'm going to modify it for the biologists and call it the multiple insult hypothesis. The name is unfortunate for the issue that we are talking about, and so this is something we are going to start exploring very little bit at a time. So I want to let you see where something that is out there is going. All right, and so what we are trying to look at in this particular piece is to try to marry biomed with elder abuse. That's what we're trying to do, marry biomed. And where that work has been predominantly done is in cancer, but others. So here's what that means. First, it is an issue that the first hit or the first insult occurs in early development, but nothing happens because of it. So if there is some, if there could be something we could find genetically that would have to do with some issue, some condition that is set in motion, but nothing else happens, that's what we would be looking for. The issue that would be additive more than once or a second time would be something environmental that then would trigger something that may create risk for abuse so that the abuse would happen. So what we're trying to do is take a biological concept and see if we can see what happens with elder abuse. Okay. Just to give you some background on this particular piece, a Knudsen hypothesis is what we were looking at here. Patients with a family history of retinoblastoma and people who had no history of it. So you can see the issue of those with a family history tended to present the condition earlier with both eyes affected. Those without a family history presented later and only had one eye. So he believed that there was a first hit of an inherited mutation and the second was a consequence of some environmental or other factor. So those without an inherited first hit would have to have two hits. They would not get that to happen, and thus the disease would occur later and typically less severely. Schizophrenia is another example where we would talk about that. Some structural brain abnormalities present, and these would include the ones that you see here, minor physical anomalies that might occur. However, many people who have these anomalies don't have schizophrenia. So the issue here is there a vulnerability that sets this up? Could this be in place? There would have to be a second or third hit before you would begin to see perhaps that you might have this, could potentially be abused. All right. Another example would be non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, inflammation of the liver subsequent to fat retention in liver cells. So having fat in the liver is not normal, but doesn't create much of a problem. However, the issue is this. Have a development of a fatty liver and the production of lipid peroxidization, and then you have injury to liver cells. That's kind of where we're going. So I'm giving you some examples from biology. And I want to tell you how Rodney prepped me on pronunciation, and I'm feeling good about having taken 3 years of Latin now. The issue of Alzheimer's disease is another one, and one that I think many of you would be familiar with. So, hypothesized to require oxidative stress and mitogenic dysregulation or cell loss of a cell's ability to regulate growth and replication or mitosis. A lot of work being done around the country on that, particularly at our place. So we're proposing that there could be multiple insults associated with this complex issue that we know as elder abuse. Here's the other piece called SNPs. Single nucleotide polymorphisms, and this is where the geneticists reside. A SNP is a genetic mutation that occurs too frequently to be considered a mutant. Alone, a SNP does not cause disease. Hypothesize that complex biomedical diseases are due to the sum of many SNPs, in addition to environmental hits like pesticides, or a very violent environment, or a very dark place, a very unsafe place. Here we go. So we know that many characteristics of elders who are abused are shared with elders who are not abused. While there's a lot of isolation, not everybody who is isolated is abused, so we need to think about that more carefully. Just as complex biomedical diseases are likely, we hypothesize that elder abuse or its perpetration may be the sum of complex biological and environmental factors. So we're trying to take what you're doing and move it in a different direction or think about it in a different way. What we're going to try to do when we do this is work with the Cabinet for Families and Children. They have a data system that we have used a good deal in some of the work we've done called TWIST. TWIST means the Worker Information System. When Dr. Mendiondo and I were down in Frankfurt, which we occasionally and more often do than we did before we started this work, we began to ask around about what the data set had. And that is always, to me, sort of an interesting thing to do. I don't know how many of you do work with state government data sets. The good thing is sometimes they'll give it to you, and that makes you very happy, and the sun is out, and the world is good. But when you get the data set and you hold it in your hands, it often feels like sand, and the world is sad, because you can't figure out what's in there. And then once you can't figure out what's in there, you can't figure out what is reliable. So you want to know how many years of this? What does this mean? What do I have when you have given me this? And often I can tell you the issue is you get very excited that you have it, and then it's yes, but. Yes, but it's not really reliable. Yes, but we only implemented this variable and so on. So yes, but that suggests an artifact of. And so we know these issues occur, although you got to start somewhere. This is where we are. We realized that there was information in Kentucky of over 30 years of information for CPS and APS. So we set our minds to work and began to think, what we would be very interested in is beginning to look at what is crossing over. Thus, we are trying to look at cases that entered the Child Protective Services and moved to Adult Protective Services and what those look like and how often that occurs. So we would be interested then in looking to VIC-to-VIC, which would be child abuse victims who become elder abuse victims, and what their characteristics might be, and are they family members? Is there a pattern here? And then the other piece would be perp to vic. Then, so that would be victim or perpetrator in an adult protective service case who would have been a child protective service case as well. And I see you're nodding your heads. While this seems intellectually something you might have thought about, empirically, I'm not sure anybody has. And so that's what we're trying to do in this particular work that we have. So let's go back to sort of the things that we know that could be problems. False positives and false negatives, a requirement to diagnose or report, improved diagnosis over time due to changing evaluations, public policy, increased awareness could create issues about looking at this data set, which will have started in the late 60s or 70s. And as you know, as people enter data, they begin to do that, it is less reliable at the front end than we hope it'll be on the other. Okay. So what do we think we will try to measure? All right, so here's where we go. Work with us here on what we think we might see. And Ron, you can see where I'm beginning to pull. That's your work too, my own. Poverty. Could this be a factor? Could this be one of the hits that may increase the likelihood that an individual could be abused? Is there something else, like, for example, presence of some inheritable dementia that then could work with poverty in a horrible mix and create some sort of abuse situation? Does education fit in? Does age fit in a consideration in this way? Dementia. multiple chronic illness, developmental disabilities, other genetic factors? Does family history, does location play into this? These are all issues public health thinks about, so that's why we're sort of in it. And does environment, would be interesting to think about locations for environmental hazards such as toxins. Would that be something to think about? Would loud noises, would lots of gunshots around, would those kinds of things have anything to do with what we're beginning to think about and see? And thus a bunch of multiple insults would ensue. So let me tell you where we are in this little tiny slide. I sympathize with my colleagues who talk about IRB issues because we run into them a lot. I see some of you nodding your head. And so many of us around this room have been happy to go to full board hearings many times before our data can ever be looked at, analyzed, or even the surprising one most recently was a study that was reported but anonymously required 2 full board hearings. My doctoral student looking at physician attitudes toward elder abuse, that required 2 full board hearings. And so, interestingly enough, these sorts of things are happening. For us, as many of you around this room who would begin to look at sorts of things like this with state data, there have to be several IRBs done. We have to have a cabinet level IRB, and they have to approve, and the university would have to approve in its way. And it's often not necessarily clear who'd like to pull the trigger, it's just somebody would like somebody else to do it first. So in this case, oddly enough, Dr. Mendiono and I were both surprised that, in fact, the university pulled the trigger first if the cabinet would. So we felt really good because we felt like the cabinet would say yes, because they sort of already had months ago. But in fact, the university was willing, but the cabinet was late last week over a series of things that we were hoping to get just a little bit of data, and they called me Monday morning to say, oh, we rethought it, we want to think about it some more. So let me tell you what we have. They agreed to supply us with just percents so you could begin to think about some of these things. So when we are looking at these data, we have just a very little bit of percentages. We took the numbers out because we were very anxious to begin to think about these issues. What the interesting number, I think, is the one that is really far to the right, and that is the number that you see there of 31.7%. And that these are preliminary data. I put the only there. But we believe, with multiple counts, from the first run of data, that about 32% of cases seem to be APS to CPS cases. Correct? Marta, is that right? Huh? Okay. And then of those cases that move from one to the other, there are more males than, there are definitely more females than males. White would be reflective of our Kentucky population. And then you can see the types of abuses that they have had on this first run of information. Looking more like spouse partner would have a lot to do with what you have found, Ron, and then very smaller percentages there on out. Okay.
And the mean ages are not there. The APS cases, of course, are older than those that came from CPS, but that's because the age group. We don't have the same ages, so the ones that came from CPS were not old enough. So the mean ages, they didn't copy, but the 43, I think they're 43 years old, the ones that APS, and the mean age for APS that went to CPS, the CPS that went to APS are 30 years old.
So APS is about 46.5 years.
And the others are 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. The others are 33.4. No. In fact, it's far to the left, but it's not cut off. That's it.
Of course, there is more. The ones that come from CPS do not have a small percentage on the end because they are not neglected, because they're not old enough to be neglected. There's no other people, so they're not neglected. They're all.
Well, they could be.
Yes, but they're not.
Okay.
So most of them, like almost 100% of them are all spousal abuse and partner abuse.
That would make a lot of sense. So I present to you very preliminary findings to try to begin down a path of thinking about. We'll see it. But anyway, we had, and I sort of tell you this other piece that occurred from the time that we presented this idea and have been thinking about it to the time that we sort of sit right at this minute. We had in our state issues about nursing home abuse that really began to get the attention of the legislature and a bunch of articles that came down. So what we had was everything stopped in state government while they issued a report to the governor on nursing home abuse. This meant that, at least by my count, 5 different meetings to try to work on these data got canceled. 5. So by the time we ever got down to brass tacks about what we would be able to do in some easy way, we were pushing up against time in October. So, and this is about how elder abuse work can go. So I guess you have some instruction here if you have ever done these sorts of things. Life can be very, very exciting. My neuro person, Dr. Gutman, has never in his life ever seen anything quite like this. He has not lived on the edge yet, but we're going to let him do that. So I will conclude. No. So I present you an hypothesis that we want to work on, and you know, we will do this eventually. Do not worry about that. And so perhaps next year we can begin to show you what we begin to think about and what seems characteristic, more of that, that looks characteristic between not just APS cases, but CPS cases that move to APS, both persons who were victims and persons who were perpetrators, and begin to sort of tease out what do the factors look like that are common, who are these individuals, do they have any family relationships, do they have any common diseases that have been identified or common disabilities that may have been identified, and I think we'll be off onto something pretty fascinating, because we sure are about it. So anyway, this is an in medias res, early approach that is looking at a theoretical perspective and trying to begin to tease out, could we be onto something? We may well be. I'm going to stop.